Hello, my name is Kevin Holtzberry. Welcome to another podcast here at Collected Miscellany. I haven't been done one of these in a while, but wanted to get back behind the mic to talk with one of my favorite authors, Michelle Herman. Michelle Herman is a professor who has taught fiction and creative nonfiction writing at Ohio State for many years, is the author of a couple of novels and a collection of novellas, as well as a few collections of personal essays. Her latest collection of personal essays, Stories We Tell Ourselves, was published by the University of Iowa Press in March. So I want to welcome her on the podcast, and thank you very much for taking some time to speak with us today, Michelle.
Hi, I'm really glad to do it.
Let's start with this interesting path you took from sort of Michelle Herman novelist to, that's kind of where how did you see yourself ending up? This book is not really a novel. It's not really a novella either. No. Tell us a little bit about your journey towards this style of writing.
I guess the journey begins with my being extremely hostile for many years to the entire undertaking of so-called creative nonfiction. I was very skeptical about it. I used to say if we were going to teach courses in creative nonfiction, we ought to be teaching courses in creative non-poetry. I was always asking writers who wrote both fiction and personal nonfiction why they would waste all that good material on nonfiction. And then in 2001, after I went through a period of not being able to write at all, after 9/11, like so many people, you know, just going through a period of having difficulty getting back in stride and going about my normal business, I started writing some true stories simply to keep myself writing because I had never gone more than a few days, not since I was probably 6 years old, without writing before. And I enjoyed it. And I found a home for the particular way that I think and some of the ways I like to write that I had been beating out of myself in my fiction, a kind of expansive, exploratory, digressive, wandering style of writing that it turned out was very well suited to the personal essay, at least as I conceive of the personal essay. And so I ended up writing an entire book. When that book, The Middle of Everything, was finished, I was sure I had said everything I had to say about my own life. I went back to writing fiction and discovered I hadn't said everything I had to say. And what's ultimately happened now after all these years is that it's very clear to me which things are on my mind that I want to write fiction about and which I want to write nonfiction about. And in the case of this book, my interest in the unconscious and the way everyday life and the kinds of metaphors and mysteries that are produced automatically as we go about our business interact has always been very interesting to me. And it's something that I think has always been present in my fiction, but I was able to approach it in a very aggressive, direct way in personal essays. And so that's what happened. I found myself, you know, writing this book that is filled with stories, but they're true stories. You know, all my whatever skills I have as a fiction writer, I think I've made good use of. It's filled with scenes. There's lots of dialogue. But I also get to talk about what I think about things in a way that I never was able to do in fiction. It's very satisfying to me. So I move back and forth between the two now very easily.
Well, do you see yourself now more expansively as a writer and sort of at what you feel you need to write next and you tackle that subject rather than sort of seeing yourself as a novelist who happened to write a book that, of a personal essay style? Now you're sort of open to all different whatever types of style you feel need to write at any given moment?
Yeah, I think actually that's true. What's interesting about it, and I've never, until this minute, I've never thought about it this way before, Kevin, is that that's how I started out. You know, I mean, children who write don't think of themselves as novelists or poets. they're people who write. And I wrote as a kid. I wrote stories and poems and true things and plays and uncategorizable things. And ultimately what happens is, you feel you have to narrow. You feel you have to focus. I remember us going through this with my daughter, because my husband is a painter, and that's what he does. And him constantly saying to our daughter, pick something and concentrate on it and get really good at it. And she was a Renaissance kid. And I kept encouraging that. And until now, it did not occur to me that what I think I was doing with her was something like what I wish I had done. I wish I had continued to expand outward rather than focus tightly. I mean, I'm glad. It's not that I'm sorry that I identified myself somewhere along the line as a fiction writer. I'm guessing in my early 20s, I thought, I am a fiction writer. And I wrote stories, and I began to make my way toward writing my first novel. And I was very strongly committed to that. Now, I think, you know, it's funny, what I would normally say in answer to this question is, well, yes, now I am just as much an essayist as I am a fiction writer, but I think the way you've posed the question is more interesting. I think what I am is just someone who writes. And sometimes it needs to be true stories, and sometimes it needs to be reflections on those true stories, and sometimes it needs to be made up out of whole cloth. And it depends on the subject matter, but there's something more to it than subject matter. I think it's what I need to do with that subject matter. You know, there are some things I would never consider writing fiction about, and plenty of things that I have no interest in writing nonfiction about. So it's not difficult to figure out which thing to do at any given time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the subject matter of the first essay in the story collection. I found it really interesting, this sort of tension there that about dreams. Everybody has dreams, or almost everybody has dreams they remember. They're fascinated by them. They sort of feel compelled to try to interpret them. But then there's this whole scientific worldview that sort of pushes that away. And you have all of the plus and minuses that come with someone like Freud. So it seems like there were a lot of pitfalls in taking this on as a subject. Tell us a little bit about how you felt compelled to tackle that subject.
It was a terrible subject. It was like, it's as if writing about dreams is the worst possible thing anyone could do. And I'm sure that my literary agent thinks that I did it on purpose, because I'm so contrary. I mean, years ago, you know, when I wrote my novel Dog, she said, if I had known that books about dogs sell like hotcakes, I would have refused to write a book that had a dog in it. Anyway, the thing about dreams is that I've always been particularly fascinated by them. I always wake up in the morning remembering my dreams, and I've always been interested in thinking about them and talking about them. And when I had my daughter, and she and I would always start the day telling each other our dreams, that became really a thing between us. And I'm not entirely sure that this is true, but I think it's true that the morning that she and I reported dreams to each other, and I talk about this in the essay, and we had essentially the same dream, is what got me started finally writing this essay, that I thought, you know, dreams are really important to me and really interesting. I need to find a way to write about them. It took me many years to actually get something written that felt right. You know, I began by writing, I'd have to go back through my files, but I began by either writing the dream that my daughter Grace and I had both had the same night, or other dreams from around that period. She was 11 or 12 at the time. She's 20 now, so that tells you how long it took. For years, I would write some about dreams, and then I would go away from it and work on other things, either other nonfiction or fiction. And I'd come back to it, and it was at least 4, maybe 5 years in before I thought, I'm not going to be able to write this unless I do some research. And that's one of the things about nonfiction that gives me pleasure, is it gives me an excuse to take the time to learn about things I'm interested in that I might ordinarily feel. I just don't have the time to spare to do. So I reread my Freud, and I went back and read Jung in a more serious way than I ever had before. And then I thought, well, and I really have to find out what contemporary psychiatrists and psychologists have to say about dreaming. And so I went down that rabbit hole, and that was sobering to discover what the contemporary, the kind of the general way of thinking is these days about dreams, which is that they're meaningless. It was quite shocking to me, and so that gave me something to focus on in the essay. The other piece that was useful when it clicked into place was my realization that everyone is so interested in their own dreams. We're all interested in our own dreams, and people hate it when other people tell them their dreams. And so that became another fulcrum for the essay. And ultimately, I think those were the two things I was playing with, was if dreams mean nothing, as the contemporary sleep and dream scientists insist, then why does everybody spend so much time thinking about them? Even these guys who write journal articles and publish books explaining why Freud was wrong and dreams give us no useful information, they're just cognitive trash, even they write down their dreams and talk about what their dreams seem to mean to them. They can't resist doing it. That led me to doing some reading in cultural anthropology and just trying to get the, in the end, and this is what happens to me when I write essays, I think, I wanted to look at dreams and dreaming in every possible way that I could think of. Or in every way, I guess I should say, that interested me. Because sometimes when I go around and give readings from the book, people ask me about, you know, the kind of supernatural stuff, dreams as foretelling the future. And I don't know what to say to them, because that part of dreams just doesn't interest me. But every aspect of it, a kind of kaleidoscopic approach to it, I felt like I wanted to run down every little thread. I'm mixing my metaphors here, but, you know, every thread I could find, I wanted to trace all the way down to its root. And I'm you know, going back and reading the essay again now, I have nothing else to say about dreams. I have said everything I have to say, and I'm done. Every once in a while, I have a dream that I wish I could include in the essay, but I think plenty of my dreams are in that. I think you would agree. Plenty of them are already in there. It doesn't need any more.
Well, I found interesting about a lot of the reviews, and in my sense of your tackling of the subject, that one of the ways you sort of get over that hurdle of talking about something people don't like to talk about is you leverage their own interest in their own lives and sort of in a conversational way can have it. It's almost like you have a conversation through these essays. Is that something, a sort of thing you think about your readers and how they interact with your personal essays? Because there's obviously a lot of personal information.
Yeah.
But it seems to humanize it and make it somehow less intimidating. If you just wrote a sort of reportorial essay on dream science,
yeah,
not
I wouldn't very many
people
read that.
Would want to
read
it, but if it's somehow connected to real life and personal stories, it seems a lot easier to access that.
You're right. I'm not thinking about audience. I'm not thinking, oh, how can I make this conversational and fun and make this information more palatable? What I am thinking about, though, is always being as true to my own voice and my own way of thinking as I can possibly be, because it seems to me a good general rule that if you are completely authentic on the page, then there will be people who will respond to it and will be invited in. Now, not everybody. No, you know, I no more expect everyone to read what I write and think, oh, this is really cool, than I expect everyone I meet to like me. In fact, I would say that, you know, I tend to inspire strong reactions in people. Either they really like me or they really dislike me. And I think the same may be true for my writing. My nonfiction in particular, I think, sounds exactly like me. And I'm pleased with that. I mean, I think that's the goal of a writer, is to not write like you talk. It's not that. It's tap into who you are, the essence of yourself, and get that down on paper. And I think people who know me, when they read my writing, can hear me speaking. People who don't know me hear something, and when they meet me, if they meet me, will often say, "You sound just like your books." And to me, that's one of the greatest compliments I can get. So I guess, you know, what I'm doing when I'm writing is constantly going back over. I mean, I revise and I revise and I revise, trying to make sure that everything there is really honest and really natural, that I'm not showing off, that I'm not using words or constructions that feel artificial to me in any way. And I'm really careful not to be boring, at least not to bore myself. You know, my feeling is I can't control whether other people are going to be bored or not. Some people read my writing and they get very bored by it. Some people find the punctuation makes them twitch. But if I'm bored by what I'm writing, I know everyone else is going to be. I mean, that's, you know, I know young writers will write and think, "Oh, this is getting boring," but that's because I've already read it over 100 times. No, that's not right. If it seems boring to you, for sure it's going to seem boring to a reader. And so that kind of liveliness is really important to me. So I guess in a way I'm thinking about the audience, but I never think about it in those terms, you know. I'm thinking about myself as the audience, and if I can keep myself interested and it seems honest and authentic to me, and every word I've chosen seems lively and seems like just the right word, then I've got to figure there's got to be somebody out there who's going to enjoy reading it. And that's as far as I take it.
What about that strategy? Is there a sense of vulnerability? Do you ever feel like trying to find a line? There's obviously a lot of personal information about you and your daughter, and the second essay goes into the details of that. Does it feel more vulnerable? Like, this is your life, this is kind of who I am, and
yeah,
somebody doesn't like it, they don't like me.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, and that is true. I think with the nonfiction, I feel this much more than in the fiction. If people don't like it, basically it means they don't like me. But you know, you get to a certain point in your life where you realize that not everyone is going to like you. So I accept that entirely. That's a different question than the question of going over the line. So far, my daughter is, I don't know if she's glad to be written about, but she more than tolerates it. She accepts it. It's a fact of life for her. I mean, she has, by the time she was old enough to be aware of what I was writing about her and asking her if it was okay, and she was always saying, sure, she didn't mind it at all. Now, there are some things I don't write about her, and it's not that I've discussed it with her and we've come up with some kind of a contract about what's okay to say and what's not okay to say. I have a sense of what seems too private, and I guess what it comes down to is I write about her in terms of my relationship with her. So it's very circumscribed. I don't write about her life per se. There are lots of other things I don't touch. I mean, I don't really write about my marriage, you may note, if you've read these two nonfiction books. I mean, I talk more about my husband in the second nonfiction book than I did in the first one, where I was very careful to say almost nothing about him, because he's a very private person. I talk about him more in this one, but I don't talk about our marriage. I talk about him. I'm not sure I would ever write about my marriage. So I think, to tell you the truth, I think the quality of personal revelation in my nonfiction is exactly like the quality of personal revelation in my life. I reveal a lot. I say a lot of stuff, and I believe that most people think that I am someone who will say anything. And that's a good trick, because if you seem like someone who will say anything, then people assume that you've actually told them everything. Mm-hmm. And you can hang on to the things that are private. I don't actually feel a need to tell the world every single thing about my life or the way I think. But I'm also very willing to expose myself. and obviously somewhat willing to expose the people I love. Of course, you know, I was doing that in fiction too. I mean, when my first novel came out, just before it came out, I gave my parents a copy of it, and it was, lots of it was based on things that had happened in real life. And I wanted to give them a chance to read the novel before strangers read it. Not that I was going to not publish it, but I just wanted them not to feel blindsided by it. And they handled it really well. I have to say, they handled it amazingly well. And I think that sort of set the stage, too, in a way, my sense that my family, my closest family, was going to be okay with my talking about private things, that they understood that I was making art out of what had happened, and they were glad that I was able to do that.